great football team with a lot of moral fiber and a lot of character, and they showed it.
Shout, a Buffalo football podcast hosted by Matt Perino and Ryan Talbot.
No place else you'd rather be than right here, right now. When it's too tough for them, it's just right.
Presented by Syracuse.com and NYUP.com.
The Bills make me wanna.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into a Friday edition of Shout, a Buffalo Bills football podcast. Still not a lot to talk about, right, Ryan Talbot? Not a big week in Buffalo Bills land. Maybe the biggest week in a long time. I mean, it's crazy to think about this, but the complexion of the organization has changed so dramatically over the course of the offseason already. This just takes it to a whole nother level with Stephon Diggs now in Houston. And we saw them sharing a couple of pictures and videos of him kind of taking his first stroll through the facility. And it becomes real. We've learned a lot more details about what went into this move. We're going to dive deeper into it and talk about all of these different levels to this, what it means, especially with the draft coming up in 3 weeks. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing great. You're right. I mean, this has been such an interesting 24-hour cycle since the trade went down. I think a lot of Bills fans and football analysts at the time thought, man, the Houston Texans made out really well here. They're you know, going for it with a quarterback on a rookie deal. And 24 hours after the fact, I've seen a lot of analysts say, I like this trade a lot less for Houston based on some of the details that have emerged.
So let's start there. I think that's the best place to be. Like the way that Houston maybe is viewing Stephon Diggs and this deal, I think plays into this a little bit, and the Texans restructure his deal. I think which had 4 years left on it. It turns into a 1 year deal. And you mentioned it, a lot of the feedback has been, okay, what does this look like for Diggs this year? Is this an all in approach for Houston? If you make a trade for Stephon Diggs, and I get it, his age is a little bit advanced, don't you want him kind of in the picture for your young quarterback for maybe a couple of seasons? But they pitch it to him, take all this money right now. It turns into a 1 year deal. You could become a free agent at the end of this. I think that's a slippery slope for Stephon Diggs, who is coming off of quite a dramatic dip in production last season in Buffalo. Now he's going to have to go learn a whole new offense. CJ Stroud was phenomenal last year, Ryan, but what if he takes a step back? What if everybody doesn't find their roles so perfectly at the beginning and it doesn't go well at the beginning? Maybe Stephon Diggs isn't leading the target share. Now with all those mouths to feed in that offense, Tank Dell, I know he's coming off the injury, but he looked like an elite receiver at times last year. And then Nico Collins, they're talking about a monster extension for him on the other end of his contract. So there's a lot of things that are kind of laced in here. And oh, by the way, maybe this is an indication that Stephon Diggs is a one-and-done kind of player at this stage of his career. I don't know if anybody wants to invest in the drama that comes along with having him on your team for more than a season.
Yeah, so, you know, first of all, Stephon Diggs is a big winner with the three voided years from the perspective of he's going to make about $43.1 million, according to Over the Cap this year, based on how those void years work, based on it being the first year of that extension money. He's going to end up getting $43 million. That doesn't mean like it's the cap hit or anything like that. So a huge win for Diggs from that perspective. But you just said it. It's a slippery slope for Diggs because of his age, because of his production. So in 2025, when he hits free agent.
Do we lose Ryan or do we lose me? Looks like we might have lost Ryan. So let me kick him out here. Maybe he can kind of pop back in here in a second. But, you know, the thing for me with Diggs, the biggest piece of all of this, that if you're willing to have a guy off of your roster for a season in which he's going to count $31 million against your cap, that should be telling you something. And I wonder if that said something to the Houston Texans as well. Okay, this is a guy coming off of a year where we know all the off the field stuff. We know the tweets. We know his brother kind of added into the mix here. And that's another part of this story with him potentially being a free agent in 2025. You know, he's been asked before about the potential of playing with Trayvon Diggs and potentially in Dallas down the line, that could be a very interesting free agency once he does hit the open market. I'll be interested to see how that plays out, but there's other stuff at play here. And I know Brandon Bean, I mean, his reluctance to get into it tells me that, you know, he doesn't want to maybe throw Stephon Diggs under the bus. There was a lot of good about their time together. Thanks for joining us, dude. Like,
yeah.
All the internet is just because I thought it was me at first. So I dumped out and it was frozen. What a horrible user experience. And now I'm gonna have to do a lot of post editing in the audio only version. So
yeah, whatever. We were joking about, you know, the technology here and you know, ducking out, and I don't know what happened, but all of my internet went out for a few minutes. I know that the weather here is a little iffy. We're getting a little bit of snow, maybe. I don't know what's happening, but hopefully it holds out here for the rest of the episode. But like I was saying, slippery slope for Stephon Diggs. One-year deals, probably, maybe from that point on. Does he chase a ring? Does he chase money? Does he try to play with his brother? So, you know, he's a winner from the short-term money, but he's a loser in terms of what's to come in terms of that. He's not going to get another big contract. He was in year one of a $96 million deal. Once he was traded. So avoiding those 3 years, it's a big risk. And for the Texans, it's also a big risk, Matt, because if he walks, they do not get a compensatory pick based on how they shorten this contract. So the fact that the Bills were able to get a second round pick for a 1 year rental, to me, that makes Brandon Bean and this organization a pretty big winner, all things considered.
One of the biggest pieces, I agree with everything that you said, but one of the biggest pieces and some of the feedback that I've heard from fans in the days after the deal is like, okay, I get all of the pieces for the future, right? Like I get like what it means in 25, all the cap space that they're going to add. I mean, they potentially all of a sudden could be a player in free agency next year. If they have like want to go out and try to find one big fish, depending on where they're at, that could be an interesting proposition. But the worry is 2024 and the potential of taking a step back as an offense. And, you know, I push back on that. I think that like one of the problems when you have such a demonstrative presence in your receivers room is that you need everybody to be in lockstep. And I think Diggs was a great leader. Like I think people loved him in the building, but all of this stuff that, in a lot of ways, he perpetuated. I think, you know, the mini camp drama, it's like you want to create like a sideshow to a degree, something that people are talking about when you go out of your way to do things like that. And I know that he was there and maybe Sean McDermott could have handled it differently. He goes on interviews the last two off seasons at the Super Bowl and he's asked countless questions about Josh Allen. He could literally put out the fire, but he did the opposite. He fanned the flames with what he didn't say about his quarterback, the situation in Buffalo. He'd always kind of try to walk it back a little bit, but in hindsight, I think a lot of the problems that the two sides ran into were caused by the way that Diggs approached this. Now, we don't know the whole story. We could just go off of the perception of everything. But my larger point here is the Bills need to go in a direction where they can find real symmetry within their offense, especially with a young play caller like Joe Brady, who has this elite quarterback and the expectations are so high. You've seen around the league, teams go with a young approach. Everybody was like, what the heck are the Green Bay Packers doing? You get rid of Aaron Rodgers, you get rid of Davante Adams, who at the time, I remember people very critical of that deal, even though he wanted to go, there wasn't much that you can do, but how are you giving up that kind of asset and not getting something to replace him? And then, oh, by the way, you look and they're adding pieces in the draft year after year. And now the Bills are in a spot where they have to do it in 1 year. But I think going a young direction, having a guy like Khalil Shakir, signing Curtis Samuel, getting two guys in the draft, I like that approach over banking on a 31-year-old receiver whose production just wasn't where you needed it to be, especially in the biggest games. That's my biggest point in all of this. When you needed him the most in the biggest games over the last couple of seasons, Cincinnati, Kansas City last year, or this last season, he just didn't show up. He didn't make plays.
Right. And he had a crucial drop, obviously, in that Kansas City game that would have set the Bills up for a close score with plenty of time to go. You don't know how the rest of that game would have panned out, but just let it go through your hands. And that's not what a number one receiver should do. So you look at the age factor, you look at how much money it frees up starting in 2025, and you look at the word culture. That's just something that we've heard Sean McDermott preach since day one. If anything was trickling into that locker room with, you know, Joe Brady inserting his new offense, and if you had any concerns about Stephon Diggs not being all into that new offense, maybe this was the time to move on from him. And the speculation out there, the reports out there, is that he requested a trade. The Bills kind of came back and said, you can go to you know, 30 other teams in this league. Obviously, you're not staying here, and you're not going to the Chiefs. That's the latest report out there. So they were willing to listen to it. They were willing to take their medicine on that dead cat, Matt, and just kind of part ways with him. And I think that speaks volumes. And, you know, our friend Tim Graham put out a podcast where he talked about a little bit of an incident in week one after the loss to the Jets, where Diggs said something to Josh Allen and Allen responded back and, you know, cut him off, kind of yelled back at him. And you don't know what Diggs said exactly, but if other teammates were coming in and telling him, we'll get him next time, and Allen was receptive, you know, maybe it wasn't the most positive message that the receiver gave to Allen. So it seems like their relationship was strained. There was no more Sports Illustrated for Kids photo shoots with piggyback rides. The comments in the off season, like you said, he fanned the flames. In season, when he had the press conference and he said, you know what, I've said I wanted to retire here, he didn't address some of the comments that his brother had made, though. And it almost feels like now in retrospect, he was giving his brother the green light to say some of the things that he was saying about Josh Allen and the Bills and getting him out of there. So, you know, you can always look back at things and say, this is maybe where things started to deteriorate with the relationship with Josh Allen, with Brandon Bean, with Sean McDermott, and the Bills kind of said enough is enough and we need to move on.
So let's dive into the parameters of seeking a trade. If that ends up being the case, as the report is out there, Brandon Bean didn't want to get into those details, but if Diggs was given the green light to go out and seek a trade and the only team that was off the table were the Chiefs for obvious reasons, what are your thoughts about him going to Houston? Because in a lot of ways, if you look around the AFC right now, and when Joe Burrow's coming off the injury, I think Cincinnati's still going to be a force. You figure Cincinnati and Kansas City and Baltimore, but you really got to consider Houston, if not in that group, in that second tier. I thought their first round playoff matchup when Stroud threw for 3 touchdowns against the Cleveland Browns, I mean, that was really impressive. I had the Cleveland Browns winning that game and potentially going on the road and upsetting the Baltimore Ravens. We talked about that on the show. So what do you think about that, the Bills potentially just for 2024, in a year where now they're in a precarious situation where they got to figure everything out at wide receiver? They're adding to the mix in Houston. We talked about the potential downfalls, but the potential like hitting on this move and having it work in all these different ways, that's something to consider. And I wonder how much Brandon did consider it before pulling the trigger on this.
Have you ever seen the meme that says who want me or who wants me? And it's like 100% no or 100%. I think that's part of it, Matt. I think Houston was maybe one of the only teams that took the bite or took the dive on Diggs in that contract. That's a lot of money to invest into a receiver, an aging receiver. And we know now what they did in voiding the last 3 years. I think that Buffalo was looking for a certain price, which we found out was a second round pick. But you have to have a partner to trade with. And I think the options were very limited. So to trade him to Houston, there's some risk there. You already mentioned Nico Collins. You already mentioned Tank Dell. CJ Stroud, unbelievable rookie season. Love the coach there. The defense has some pieces. They went all in free agency, adding some really nice pieces as well. But that's still a tough division. I had the Texans as the favorites before this trade. They're still my favorites now. Jacksonville was one of the hottest teams in the league, though, Matt, last year for the first half of the season stretch. Indianapolis almost snuck into the playoffs last year with Gardner Minshew, and we saw how they looked with Richardson at quarterback. That division's not just going to be there for the Texans to steamroll over everyone and to claim the first or the second seed in the AFC. I think they're going to be a playoff team. And maybe the Bills will face them in the playoffs, which would be high drama. But when it comes to trades, you can only go to the table with teams that are willing to listen and send you something back in return that you think is worthwhile. So The Bills are playing a dangerous game, sending him within the same conference. And we'll see how it plays out. But I think at the end of the day, the Texans were probably one of the only teams that came back to the Bills with an offer.
Mm-hmm. So I've been pouring through all of the responses. You did it a couple days ago on Wednesday on the Shout Insider text line. People, you know, flooding that thing with commentary, with questions, with frustrations. there's one particular I want to kind of shout out, but you could become an insider right now by texting 716-528-6727. That'll give you a 2-week free trial. It's $3.99 a month after that. And the Shout text line is brought to you by Carrie C. Beyer, attorney with the law offices of Francis M. Litro, located at 237 Main Street in Buffalo, New York. If you or someone you know is seriously injured, give Carrie a call at 716-852-1234 or check out litrolaw.com. And this is a sentiment that was sent in by our good buddy David Townsend. Diggs signing a 4-year extension, pocketing $16 million at signing, then quitting on the Bills midseason and then forcing a trade. Wow. Hopefully other teams will shun him. He will no doubt be on his best behavior this year, but he's no good in my eyes. Destroyed his legacy in two places now. And it's interesting because if you think about how he left Minnesota and the outpouring of vitriol that was sent about from Vikings fans on Diggs when that happened. You know, this was a really good marriage in Buffalo. It was a necessary marriage in the sense that Josh Allen was able to develop into the quarterback that he is. And I think Diggs played a huge role in that. So there's a lot of good, there's a lot of good memories, but the legacy that he left in Minnesota, it popped up its ugly head after a couple of seasons. And in a lot of ways, Ryan, this played out almost the exact same way. And it's for somebody that's so determined to win. He sure does a lot of things that makes winning hard. And I know Sean McDermott and Josh Allen are never going to throw him under the bus and necessarily say it. But I think you take all the stuff that's happened in the games, like 13 seconds, of course. I mean, I'll probably put that into another pile all on its own. But some of these, like the lack of plays that are made in these big time games, those things are just as harmful as some of the discord that was permeated through this team under Diggs's watch as a captain. And that he's got to wear that too. It can't just be you're getting patted on the back for the leadership stuff when you're doing good and guys are pumping you up. You got to take it when there's a level of miscommunication or relationship strain inside the building too.
When you look back at this and how things ended in Minnesota and how things ended in Buffalo, there's other GMs, there's other coaches that are looking at this and they're saying the Bills took the highest dead cap hit in NFL history for a non-quarterback to get rid of their number one receiver going into a season where, you know, they've already lost some key pieces. There's already talk about the window closing and the Bills were willing to do that. It speaks volumes without having Brandon Bean, Sean McDermott, Josh Allen have to say anything about Stephon Diggs. The fact that they were willing to do this after some guarantees locked in a few weekends ago, it speaks volumes, Matt. So yeah, now you're looking at this and how he ended things in Minnesota, how he ended things in Buffalo. And, you know, things are going to be good in Houston, at least for this year. There's no doubt about it. He's looking to either maybe cash in again and re-sign in Houston, or maybe he wants to be on his best behavior to sign a 1-year deal to try to win a Super Bowl or join his brother in Dallas. Things are going to be good for 1 year, but as time goes on, there's a pattern here now. And that's concerning if you're a team that's trying to bring in a piece to the puzzle to potentially try to win a Super Bowl.
So let's look at this depth chart now. Before we do, I want to look at the Bills wide receiving room and like, where's the panic meter going into this draft? And that could kind of like springboard us into the draft conversation here quickly that I want to have. I'm going to give a shout out to our buddy, Scott Maranto, an insider as well. He just sent me his wide receiver rankings. I'm going to put that up on the screen in a minute. But before we get into all of this, I got to let everybody know, we just had a live show at 2-9's Kitchen Bar. It was absolutely outstanding. Shout out to Chuck, the ownership group, all of the folks that were there. We had a great time. We even hit a couple golf balls at the end. I got the video to prove it. Ryan doesn't want me to release this video, but listen, on the insider text line, maybe I'll make a private YouTube video of all these clips and I'll send it out to you as a special bonus if you sign up to become an insider. We're getting right back at it, Ryan. We are going to have our live mock draft at Wingnuts 1 week from tomorrow, April 13th, 6 p.m. Come out to Wingnuts, 1402 Millersport Highway. We're going to have a great time. The best wings in Buffalo. And people like kind of push back on me when I say that. Check this out, Ryan. Guess where I went after class last night to get takeout for the kids and Caitlin?
Wingnuts.
Wingnuts. Got ourselves 30 signature. I'm a sucker for the signature. Sorry. A beef nuts, which gives you the beef on whack and five extra chicken wings. And we pounded it last night. So get out to Wingnuts. Check out the great food, the great drink selection. They got great beers on tap up at Wingnuts. We're going to be partying out there. And it's going to be cool, Ryan, because my idea is to set it up. Got that TV screen that's in the background there. I'm going to HDMI our one computer to that screen, and we're going to run a live draft board. And I have an idea, Ryan. Do any fans that want to come out want to participate and be one of the teams? Like, that could be really fun, and we'll get you on the board. We'll get the mic in your face. You can make a pick. You can make a pick maybe in the hopes that a team doesn't take somebody because you want them to fall to the Bills. We can have all those fun conversations. Hit me up on the insider line or on the email mperino@nyup.com. It's going to be fun, Ryan.
It's going to be a blast. Shout out to 2-9's, though. Had a great time. First time swinging a golf club in about a decade, and it was ugly at first, but some tips there from the pros. I hit a few nice ones toward the end there, Mr. Perino.
I didn't get any of those on video.
Yeah, of course you didn't. Of course, those are the ones that you didn't get. But
I apologize, but I am going to post all the other ones.
Wingnuts, really excited about that. We went there actually on Wednesday after getting all the equipment from your house, we stopped there and Wing Wednesday, dollar wings if you dine in, and can't beat that deal. So we love that. We're excited to be there for the live draft and mock draft and Bills Mafia and insiders. Come on out and join us and pick up a team and draft for them.
All right. Bills, according to our lads, which I think does a really good job with the latest and updated depth charts right now. I don't always agree with how they have this kind of lined up, but let's go through this a little bit. They have the slot wide receiver. The number one listed is Curtis Samuel. And I think I might put him at Boundary and Shakir in the slot, but there might be an argument to be made that Shakir could go into some type of metamorphosis this offseason. I mean, he's obviously working with Eric Molds, probably looking to take his game to the next level. I think if there's an ability to separate a little bit more on the outside, that could be really exciting. So they got Samuel at slot. I'd probably switch him with Shakir for now. Andy Isabella still on the roster. Then Shakir, Tyrell Shavers, and KJ Hamler. And then at the other wide receiver spot, they have Justin Shorter and Mac Hollins. So right now, looking at this depth chart, your top three wide receivers, according to this depth chart, and of course, we could poke holes in it, Shorter, Samuel, and Shakir. So I think just from right now where they sit, what are your thoughts on this wide receiver room? Like, are you super stressed if you're Brandon Bean sitting there looking at this thing? Do you like the complementary skill sets do you have? And what's the key piece that's missing? Because I think I tend to agree with Big Mike in the comments here that there's not that one big downfield speed guy. And I think that could be where the Bills look to address that in the draft.
You know, you use the term panic meter. And for me, my panic meter would be at a one or a two right now, because we're a long way away from meaningful football to be played. And there's a draft with the deepest wide receiver class in many, many years that's right on the horizon. There are still some decent free agents on the market. Now, mind you, no one that I would call a prototypical number one wide receiver, but still some decent names. And there's going to be some other good receivers that hit the market post-draft. based on what teams are able to address that position and maybe cut ties or cut loose some contracts that they want to get away from. So right now, zero panic. In terms of what's missing, yeah, they're missing that outside burner. And I don't necessarily think that one of the top three are in Buffalo's price range. I don't know if they're willing to part with all the picks to get a Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Neighbors, or Romo Dunze.
Joe Biscaglia put the internet on fire this morning.
I like it. I like it. But
here's my one pushback on that. And I'd love to have Joe maybe on next week and we could dive into his mock. He had the Bills trading up with the Titans to 7 to get, and he gave up a lot of draft capital. The one this year, the two this year, and one of the fourths. So basically, within the first 120 picks, you're getting Malik Neighbors, who he ended up trading up and getting. Now, if you have the conviction for that, I guess I don't necessarily have a huge issue. My trade-up idea would be for Adunze, just because I think Joe Marino said this on social media. He seems like more of like a culture fit for the Bills. Like I saw like Neighbors' video, that Instagram video where he predicted Brian Thomas would go to the Bills. And I don't know, just the vibe of that, like, I don't know. It just didn't scream process guy to me. But as a player, I mean, he's absolutely electric and lights out. And I think you got to be careful when you're judging those things. And you can't judge a book by the cover. We don't know behind the scenes what kind of makes him up. But we do know that Adunze is like, I mean, dude, the work ethic. I watched that one video that Jeremy shared, the interview that ESPN did with him. And, you know, his grandfather who had a bike accident and who had worked on a farm all those years. And he would go spend summers there and was working on the farm. Man, like, just screams process, right? I mean, that Adunze is really interesting in that way.
And Adunze at the combine as well. I believe it was the 3-cone drill. He wasn't satisfied with his time. He was like the last receiver on the field. This guy that's a round one lock until he completed it at a time that he kind of was happy with. You're right. That screams process. That screams something that Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott would love. Neighbors, though, there are some draft analysts that have him as their number one receiver in this draft. So, from Joe's perspective, he might be in that same boat saying he's number one or he's a 1B to Marvin Harrison Jr. So, either one of those guys would be great. Brian Thomas Jr., though, in terms of the player, if they miss out on those top three, I think he is that outside burner, 4.39, 6.3. I think that you're just scratching the surface of what he can be. As a route runner, as a game changer, you can really stretch the field with him, though, as a rookie. You know what you're going to get with Curtis Samuel in this offense. You know that Khalil Shakir is on an upward trajectory based on what we've seen from him through 2 years. So if you can get that other piece in the draft and, you know, Brian Thomas Jr. being wide receiver 4 in my eyes, it makes a lot of sense with a move up that you don't have to give up the farm necessarily. Maybe you can go into that teen range without giving up the multitude of picks that you'd have to get into the top 10. You're still giving up some valuable picks, but you're getting a guy that you think can be that wide receiver one. If you stay put at 28, there's conversations to be had about Ladd McConkey, who sat on Up and Adams, said he's met with the Bills multiple times, smiled about the potential of playing with Josh Allen, saying how great that would be. Xavier Legette is a player that's rising up a lot of these mock drafts right now, and I love everything about his game too, as an outside wide receiver. So there's guys there at 28, and there's no doubt in my mind the Bills are going to take someone early. And then I expect them to double dip again, but there's still so many paths for the Bills to address this need that I'm not panicked. I'm not worried right now. What are your thoughts, though, with the draft approaching?
Yeah, so I definitely think that there's areas that the Bills need to address in their wide receiver room. I think that, you know, Khalil Shakir and Curtis Samuel, while different, like the speed is different, the way they win in their routes is different. They're not like comparable players. They are comparable size and like what you can do with them and a lot of times where they're going to line up. So I think trying to find a boundary X isn't like this got to do it in the draft kind of thing, but it's something that I think could give their offense something more. And so like against the idea of trading up, if you have to sell the farm to do it, I think I'm comfortable in that spot because I think there's so much depth. I think you can get two guys potentially in rounds 1 and then round 3 if you come back, that I think are the kind of skill sets that you add to the receiver room that you're really super excited about. So I think Javon Baker is a guy that is getting, I think he's probably more appreciated and higher on NFL boards than he is on media boards, which makes this hypothetical a little bit tough to dive into, because if you can get up into the third round somewhere and he's still on the board and you can add him after going receiver in the first round at 28. And I think there are a couple of guys. I think Leggett and Ladd McConkey to me are in that tier with AD Mitchell after Brian Thomas. Like, I don't put them all in the same tier. And I'm going to bring up Scott's here in a second, because he sent in a really fun little, the way that he kind of broke this all up. But how I feel about Leggett is that he's got the speed at 4.39. You like that. He has that ability to win after the catch, give you some of that yards after the catch, but he's also that guy that I think can separate and do those kinds of things. Baker is a guy that has that long speed, I think, that maybe that play speed that you can put in some of those traditional situations because the strength of his game is a separator. So if you could somehow land at McConkey or Leggett, or maybe even AD Mitchell, I'm kind of peeling back off of that just because of how I think the Bills might view him, diving into some of these scouting reports. But I think that would be fine. And then if you get him, maybe you come back in the second round with something crazy and go with a Pearsall or one of those, another guy that is interesting. I know he's a true slot, but if you looked at some of the advanced numbers on Jacob Cowing out of Arizona, they're like off the charts. Yeah. I mean, he's a guy like a day two, early day three guy that I think a team is really going to like. Kind of reminds me of like Josh Downs from last year.
Yeah, there's so many potential names out there. And John, we know the Bills don't have a third-round pick right now, but they can easily trade into the third round with the draft capital that they have. We've seen Brandon Bean wheel and deal up and down the draft board in his tenure here. So while they don't have that third-round pick, they're likely banking on from Tremaine Edmonds, the compensatory pick formula. They're still very much in play to make a third-round pick, in my opinion. I see we have a super chat here, Matt, so maybe we can get to this before we check out Scott's big board here.
Start up.
Yeah.
Good thing you're paying attention, Ryan. That's what we like about you. You're always all right. Are you going to put it in or am I going to put it in?
I think we must both be doing it at the same time. So yeah, I'm going to let you
put it in right hands now. Off. Donald Darko, $9.99. Are you out of your mind? Thank you so much, Donald. I agree wholeheartedly. I think all the value in this draft is second, early, third. I think Malik Washington in the fourth and Luke McCaffrey in the sixth are really good down the board depth picks. I mean, those are guys that I haven't even started to dive into. You had Luke McCaffrey as somebody that you had the Bills take late, I think sixth-ish round in your mock draft that came out a little while ago.
And Luke McCaffrey is a player that I really am high on, converted to wide receiver within the last 2 years, showed a lot of, he just showed, the smarts, and it's no surprise they're looking at the family bloodlines in terms of how smooth that transition was from quarterback to wide receiver that he made at Rice. That I think that the sky is the limit. You know that Brandon Bean loves the McCaffrey family. He played a role in drafting Christian McCaffrey to Carolina. He was in a lot of potential, the rumored trade talks for McCaffrey when the 49ers eventually ended up getting him. So I'm sure he did his due diligence there, and I'm sure he's done his due diligence on Luke McCaffrey. And, Luke McCaffrey probably screams more of a slot receiver, and we've already talked about how the Bills have some guys there. But if they have confidence in Khalil Shakir, if they want to use, if they want to move him more so on the outside, if they think that there's potentially a piece or a role for McCaffrey here, wouldn't it surprise me one bit if they did look at him on day three.
Thank you so much for the super chat.
Yes.
It was really cool. And I think there are going to be, as we get closer to the draft and Ryan and I, next week, I think over the next week, I'm going to spend some time really looking at some of those later guys. So we could kind of potentially look at that and talk about some options in the later rounds. That'll be exciting. All right. Let's take a look at this real quick. See if I can share my screen and if it will pop up. For some reason, it's not letting me share just the picture. I love bringing everybody into the tech conversation. I think that that's a fun time. Let me see. Okay, do we got it here? No, that's not it. I don't know if it's going to let me share. I'll just read it through. I don't even have to share the screen. So Scott Maranto, one of our insiders, sent in, we played basketball on Wednesday and Fridays, actually. We met actually at a live show years ago. We have a bunch of local connections, so we've become friends. He's a subscriber on the insider line, and we were talking about the wide receivers this morning, obviously about on the aftermath of the Diggs trade, and we didn't get a chance to finish it. So he said, here's how I'm stacking my wide receiver board. Only make a move for one of these three if in some way one of them falls past the Jets at 10. Marvin Harrison Jr., Adunze, Neighbors. Pick at 20, and he put that in there too. We talked about it. I think, to me, the trade-up scenarios really become possible outside of that top 10. Yeah. So if the 12th pick comes up and one of those guys is still on the board, that's when I think if you're Brandon Bean, you really start to think about it. But I think getting up into the top 10, it's going to cost too much. And who knows? Maybe there's a player you can throw in. Ryan, what do you think about this? This is something that's been kind of talked about a little bit. And at first I was like, no, I don't think you want to mess around with this. But the more I think about down the line stuff and the potential contract extension that he's going to sign, what would you think about Spencer Brown being added into this? The Bills adding a tackle, maybe early day three in a deep tackle class.
No, I think that's smart. I mean, you're protecting yourself from one Brown maybe playing another high level year where there's going to be a lot of money thrown his way, and maybe the Bills don't feel comfortable throwing that much. And two, why wouldn't you always address the tackle position if it's a deep tackle draft? Brown was phenomenal last year. I'm going to start there. But this is someone that has had a player who has had a history of back injuries. He's had some surgeries already. It's something where you don't want to just bank and assume that he's going to stay healthy year after year. You always want to fill the cupboard, so to speak. And I think that in a deep tackle draft, you'd be foolish not to look at some of these players that could fall into your lap. I know that, you know, they do have some guys that they like. Ryan Vandermark comes to mind. I think that he has shown that he can be pretty solid at left tackle. There was still some issues at right tackle we saw in the summertime. He'll get better with time, though, at both spots, I'm sure. You bring in some veterans. You bring in some competition. Lyle Collins was signed yesterday. I'll be interested to see where they line him up. I think that he's going to be competition for left guard based on the contract numbers. We haven't seen the specifics, but if he can get up to $6.75 million, that tells me they're at least telling him you can compete for a starting job on this line. And that's really the only spot that would be up for grabs. So he has experience, though, at right tackle too. You still go out and you add talent. If there's someone that falls in a deep tackle draft, the Bills would be wise to add one to this roster.
You know, there's also like Ryan Vandermark. I know that he's left tackle, but you know, he played pretty well in the preseason last year. He's somebody that comes in. I'm actually like, real quickly, we could shoehorn the Collins signing yesterday. The reports are the deal's worth up to $6 million. I wouldn't be surprised if that's closer to like two on the salary cap. Once that comes out, there's probably a lot of incentive, playing time incentives that are in that deal. He didn't play all of last season, if I'm not correct, right, Ryan? He missed all of last year.
Yes, because he suffered a serious ACL-MCL injury in week 16 of 2022 against the New England Patriots. He rehabbed. He was ready to play in late December. That's when the Bills kind of kicked the tires on him. He ended up signing with the Dallas Cowboys practice squad a few days after that. But yeah, did not really play any meaningful snaps last year.
So I'm not as high on the idea of him being the day one right tackle. I think over the last three seasons, if you're talking about Lyle Collins from like 4 or 5 years ago, sure. Like, sign me up for that. But the guy that we've seen over the last couple of years, I don't know if you're penciling him in. I would maybe give a Ryan Vandermark the edge on him if Brown was removed from the situation. But again, these are all hypotheticals. I'm not suggesting the Bills are going to trade Spencer Brown. I'm just thinking as they continue to look at some of these, like, contract extensions that are coming up, you know, the Greg Rousseau's of the world, the Spencer Browns of the world. I just wonder, you know, Christian Benford, dude, Christian Benford has one more big season. And we could be talking about next offseason, the Bills trying to lock him into a big time contract. If he plays, like if he's now their version of Trey White from a couple of years ago, like if he goes out and puts up, let's say an all pro caliber season, if he's able to stay healthy, we're talking about a huge extension for him next offseason. And you just have so many of these that you can give out.
Exactly. I mean, the Bills freed up some big money by parting ways with Diggs in 2025. They're already set to have a decent amount of money, but they're not going to put themselves in the same situation again, where they're having to restructure, redo deals, and there's only so many players that you can sign to big money contracts. You know, Benford, you mentioned it, if healthy, if he can stay healthy, that's the caveat there. He needs to be able to show that. He's been banged up a little bit here, but they found some gems in these late rounds in the past few years, and I think Benford has the potential to be a star in the making. And you don't want to let him walk out the door knowing Russell Douglas is entering the final year of his deal. He's 30 years old. You don't have much else there. So I think cornerback's going to be another higher priority, where you pick one or two in the draft. You bring in some UDFAs to kind of compete. That's going to be on the defense side of the ball, one of their priorities. And there's other needs too. So they can't just go and attack, you know, maybe trade all these picks up for a wide receiver that you'd like to in the top 10. But if one falls out of that range, like Scott mentioned, then yes, that's when you do kind of package some picks and make a run at it. But getting into the late teens, early 20s, that seems like the most realistic path to me, and that might be Brian Thomas Jr.
I'm gonna just rifle through these. He has pick at 28 or slight move up if necessary for Brian Thomas and Xavier Leggett. I might put Thomas in his own category. I don't know if I'm trading up for Leggett, but listen, if you like the guy enough, I already mentioned how much I like about the versatility of his game. Maybe a couple spots wouldn't be crazy. I'd put McConkey in the Leggett category and A.D. Mitchell. He has those two with Ricky Pearsall, very high on Pearsall. Ooh. Pick at 28, but prefer to move back slightly. Then he has pick at 60, Troy Franklin and Roman Wilson. A ton of people were not thrilled about my Troy Franklin pick at 60 because the pushback was he wasn't going to be there. But this is literally a deep class, and depending on how you see it, you know, we could see, live in a world where Javon Baker goes over Troy Franklin. He's one of the four options that he has in round three. Jermaine Burton out of Alabama, Jalen Polk, who I think is really interesting out of Washington, and then Keon Coleman. What a interesting prospect that is, because some people have him fringe first round, other people have him in the first round. So thanks to Scott for sending those in. A little shout out to him. Final thought, Ryan, because we've got to jump out of here.
Final thought, Keon Coleman is a polarizing prospect. Wouldn't be surprised if the Bills were higher on him, not first round high, but maybe second round high on him based on how he actually played on the field versus testing results. But very deep draft class. Javon Baker is another target that I wouldn't mind the Bills adding. Seems to fit in terms of a Stephon Diggs replacement in terms of what he can do. So some intriguing names out there, Bills Mafia. Buckle in, draft is here before we know it.
Buckle in and drive to Wingnuts next Saturday, a week from tomorrow. We will be out there for our live mock draft special. If you want to participate in the party, reach out to me on the Insider text line, 716-528-6727. Send me a DM on X or send me an email at mperino@nyup.com. We can chat about that. That's it. He's Ryan Talbot. I'm Matt Perino. We'll be back next week. Take care, everybody.